Hi, you're listening to Saints Unscripted.
Each episode is available to view on YouTube, so be sure to check us out.
We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Saints Unscripted. Today, we're here with Brett and my father. So, hi, Dad. We're going to be talking about missions, and we kind of wanted to get, like, perspectives from different times, and so I thought my dad served a mission, and he's old, so we'll have him on.
Thank you.
And apparently, I'm older than Sabrina.
Slightly.
We're from different generations, so I am also the old person on here.
I'm like the cusp of Gen Z, Gen Millennial. So.
And as Sabrina has informed me, I'm squarely a millennial. So.
Sure. So Brett will be the millennial mission perspective. I'll be the beginning of Gen Z perspective, and then my father, whose name is Darren, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes, give him a name. Yes. He'll be the Gen X perspective. And obviously, there's a lot more than that, but we'll just, I don't know what I say right
now. Let's dive into it. Let's go.
Okay.
We've got a fiery list here.
So, yeah. So, I have a list of, I don't know, parts of a mission, and we'll just kind of like talk about maybe our experiences with those things, highlight things that we loved about it, or things that we wished in our time were maybe a little different. So yeah, you ready?
Ready.
Let's go.
Okay. Darren, Dad, where did you serve and when?
I served in the New Zealand Auckland mission between 1987 and 89, and my mission president was Herschel Pedersen. He's actually from American Fork. So I win. Thank you.
Nice.
Okay, we're done. Just kidding. Okay, Brett, what about you?
The southern part of Chile, the Osorno mission, there's penguins there.
And what years?
2014 to 2015.
Okay. And I served in the Berlin, Germany mission from 2017 to 2018. And my mission president was from Frankfurt. Where's yours from?
I had two. First one, I have no idea where it was from. Second one was from Tijuana, Mexico. The first one, like, lived in South America, but he was, like, from Utah or somewhere. I love you, President, wherever you are.
Let's just start with the thing I have on the top, which is P-Days, otherwise known as Preparation Days. For those who don't know, it's the day of the week where you get to go grocery shopping and I don't know what else you do, but to prepare for the rest of the week where you're working all the time. So what were your P-Days like?
Well, since I'm oldest, I'll go first, I guess. Right. Our P-Days were, yeah, like you said, mainly we did a lot of preparation. So we'd do our laundry, shopping, grocery shopping, and that kind of stuff. But we'd also, you know, do something fun, like the zones we get together, our district, and play basketball, usually volleyball on my mission. That was a pretty big thing. And occasionally we do some sightseeing, maybe going on a hike up a mountain or something fun. But yeah, pretty much that's it. I mean, that was till 6 o'clock and then you revert back to mission service. But
yeah. Okay, a similar P-Day experience, except I think we had like stricter rules about like what kind of like field trips, we kind of called them, you could do. And we could get together with the zone like once every 6 weeks. I loved like the sightseeing. Like we had such a beautiful mission. I would have loved to have done more of that. I don't think we were like prohibited. We just should have planned better.
Well, we had to stay in our zones. We couldn't just run or wander around the mission. Yeah. Typical.
Yeah. Mine were not so different in terms of those things. Did all of your P-Days have to end at 6 p.m.?
Yeah.
What did you do after that?
Well, then we would get back in the missionary attire and go visits or had either a dinner appointments, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But typical mission work service, mission work, proselyting or trying to find somebody to talk to.
Finish out the day.
Yeah. My Mondays, for some reason, in every area that I was in, the ward had the family home evening for like the misfits in the ward at that time. And we always had to be at it. And sometimes the misfits were misfitty, you know? And so we always went every single time to it. And sometimes we'd be like, I don't know if this is the first like place we want to bring investigators to. And so we would talk to our bishops. We'd be like, should we should we not? Should we do something else that like is more helping the people that we're teaching? And they said, no, your ward needs you to be at the family evening. So that's what we always did.
Misfits, do you mean like just like single members that didn't have like families?
Single, quirky.
Yeah. You know. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, so sometimes we felt like we weren't doing the right missionary work, but you know, if the bishops in that area needed that and we were the ones to help. So
that warms my heart, Sabrina, because I would always attend the Misfit family home evening as a member of the Misfits.
Aww.
And you would have been there to help.
One thing I noticed by looking at my children's mission pictures on their P-Day is they always wore their badge on P-Day, even though they're not necessarily in their missionary attire. And we never did.
Oh.
We were like incognito, just going around.
Under the radar. Yeah.
Were you always in like jeans and comfort stuff, Brett?
On like P-Day?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a pair of jeans that did not fit super well and like a Mickey Mouse shirt that was a triple XL. That was my go-to outfit.
Yeah. See, in my mission, it was kind of, not for everyone, but for some reason in the companions that I was in, we were pretty much in our mission attire, like almost all of the P-Days, even though I wish we weren't.
But a moment of silence for your lack of
too
casual
many skirts.
Clothes.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So that's probably good.
For that's P-Day.
That's P-Day. Next thing we have member lessons. Is there anything interesting about your member lessons?
Like as a whole mission culture, I don't remember anything crazy specific, but you just have like those funny experiences of like bringing somebody and sometimes you forgot to tell them anything. So they have no idea what's coming and that's on you. But sometimes you'd like prep them like, hey, here's what we're going for. Like get in there and you're talking about the restoration and they're like, have you heard of the three kingdoms of glory? And like, they just hijack it and go off somewhere else.
Oh.
So this is like not a specific thing, but I wish I had done a better job maybe setting the stage with these members of what's about to go on so that the investigator wasn't supremely confused about what was being discussed or why.
Yeah, that's good.
So we're talking member families or member
I was talking about member, like visiting the member families.
Whoa.
But
okay. Tee off with that one. That's great.
I'm struggling making this sound good. Okay. But
now my mission, of course, it might have been more of my mission, but there's a lot of Polynesians and they're very loving and they love to feed missionaries. So whenever we went to a member family, it usually involved food.
Yeah.
And them feeding us. And usually they give them a short, you know, spiritual message. And then, of course, hit them up for some contacts or referrals. But I remember one time we were out tracting. And we had some time to kill before dinner appointment. So we stopped at a member's house kind of unannounced, right?
Yeah.
Probably the mistake we had. And they set us down and just left the room. We're like, all right. Came back about 20 minutes, said, okay, elders, the dinner's ready. We're like, oh, thanks. So we ate dinner and then we left and went to our dinner appointment. So
oh.
Yeah.
Happened more than once, probably.
So, I mean, the unannounced part can be risky.
So it's usually best to have a plan
before
you go out.
Yeah.
Okay, not to talk too much, but quick. So I gained like a solid 40 pounds on my mission. Tore through all of my pants just by like sheer mass of myself. Okay. And as you're talking about people feeding, like visiting members, I wish I had like just not eaten everything, obviously, that was put in my plate. In fact, one lady that wasn't a member, her son was on a mission. She fed us like a full plate of beef and rice and then came out with another full plate of like beef and chicken. And I don't know how to be like not graphic about this, but those last couple bites of food that I was eating, I for sure was about to throw everything up, like every single bite. So I would change not eating everything set in front of me.
Yeah. But how do you do that? I think this is also a question for anyone else who's served a mission and is watching this. Like, did any of you have a mission where you weren't kind of force fed? Because I think that's a universal experience. Yeah. Like, I remember times where I felt like that, or like had multiple eating appointments and I'm like getting at the dessert and I can't swallow it. Or
I guess I should have been like, hey, like, Armana, my vision's kind of blurry right now. Like, I can't see super well. I should probably stop eating. I don't know.
Yeah, but why does it have to get to that point? I wonder, did anyone have it where they weren't force fed a lot? And where did you serve?
Well, of course, on my mission, the Polynesians love to feed you, but if you finish your plate, that means you want more food.
So don't finish
it. So you had to learn that early on to leave some food.
Yeah. In Germany, there is some like fork and knife etiquette where depending on where you put the fork and knife, it tells them that you're full, that you've like, you finished eating and you appreciated the food. And technically, there's also a way that means you didn't like it, which you should never do. So like you learn that so you don't do it. But if you forget to put it that way, then they assume that you want more too. So
is there an orientation for like dessert? Like,
well, if they set your table and there's a little tiny spoon at the top, then you know there's going to be dessert.
What a cool cultural tradition. They call it
the little prophet. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So a big one that's changed throughout missions is like how you communicate with your family.
Whether it was
snail mail, email, FaceTime mail. And in my mission, it was just email. You did the twice a year, like FaceTime or Skype call. And I loved writing letters. I think I could say what I was feeling and maybe tell like more spiritual stories through email that I would have never been able to say just like through a face call. I don't know. I have an easier time writing about those things.
Yeah.
So it would have been cool to call my family a lot like missionaries do now. But I am grateful that I had to write instead and put some of those like more special experiences into words. Mm-hmm. So that's my take on my communication.
You liked the way that
I did.
It was.
I liked emails. Yeah. I don't know if I would like a call every week. I love you, Mom.
Well, especially because I think the people who have calls, they can call now, right? I bet there's some pressure that they need to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe if they don't want to, then people are like, why aren't they calling?
It's the preferred style, I think.
Yeah.
For most people.
Well, of course, when I went, we didn't have email or the internet or
no AOL.
We had mail. We had mail.
Yeah.
Snail mail. So that's what we did. We wrote letters every week. And
did you write them every week?
I was good. Yeah. We had to write our family a letter every week. And of course, we had to write our report to our mission president every week. Uh-huh. So that was kind of our, you know, one things we did. And
handwritten your report to your mission president?
Well, we had a form that we had to fill out.
Okay.
Kind of like a little spot for a letter to the mission
How
president.
Are you feeling? And you like circled the smiley face on the
get my companion out of here. The only time we had any, visit our vocal communication was the two calls a year.
And it's just
Mother's
phone call?
Mother's Day and Christmas. And it was just a phone call. Yeah, usually.
Do you remember how much they cost?
They were not cheap. Yeah, back in the day, you just couldn't call anywhere for free. So it was long distance international call. So my mom was probably like watching the clock, hey, you got to go. So, all
right. It was great. Talk to you later.
Yeah. But it was great. I mean, and then there was more of a desire back, before the open communication that is now to help the missionaries really kind of more detach from their family.
Yeah.
In a way that they can focus more on the service.
Yeah.
And of course, that's kind of changed with
the
times.
They see there's benefits to both types, right?
Yeah.
And I think maybe in this time of like mental health awareness, it's maybe better that they have the option, I think, for some people.
Yeah.
What they have now. But mine is pretty much the same, obviously, because we didn't serve too far from each other. But I also sent audio messages to people. So,
that's cool.
So we were like, because in Germany, to go places where a lot of times we're in the trains for like 30 minutes to get to where we want to go for P-Day. And so I'll just, in the train, just talk it so I don't get motion sick or just kind of chilling. So that was kind of fun. But right after I returned home, and my sister was still on her mission at that time, and that's when they changed it to video calls.
Okay. So.
I didn't feel gypped, though. I liked not having the video calls, honestly. So.
And I'd love to be able to go back and read the letters that we wrote, that I wrote anyway. Say this is how I felt on this date.
Yeah. And I think that the video calls, for some people, at least in the experience of my younger siblings, made their weekly email, like to everyone, way less, like less content.
I'm thinking my brother-in-law right now. If you watch this video, you.
And my younger son.
Yeah. It's like two lines, like things are good, or don't send one at all. And I like that I always had a pretty solid weekly email that I can look back on, kind of like journal entry in a way. So
that way, like your mission gets further than just like your immediate family. Like friends, cousins, and stuff get to know about your experiences.
The list.
All right. On to finding people. I think it is great. I just knocked doors, my mission. knocked doors, talked to people in the street, like entirely.
How successful was that?
I was going to say, I don't remember, but that's like a cop out. Like, all right. Huh. I think that's how most people like found people in our mission. Like friends and part member families were probably most of the baptisms, but like I still found people to teach that way. Yeah. But there's like a scripture somewhere in the Old Testament about missionaries being like hunters and being like the fishers after the harvesters, like looking, we interpret that as like looking for people with your gifts and talents. Like you are a specific person and you can find specific people. I wish I had used my creativity to just find in different ways. Like maybe just like singing to people with knocking doors, like setting up booths, like organizing odd things at the church. Like,
yeah,
you know, I think there's so many more things that you could do aside from just knocking in doors to invite people to learn more. Yeah. I wish if I could go back, I would change that one for sure.
Okay, yeah. Did you, Dad, find in other ways?
Yeah, we did the knocking on doors. You know, that's like your last resort, you know, nothing else to do. But we would try to work through member families, through part member families, and we did a lot of work with Less Active, trying to reactivate, so that helped find, you know, members that really potential way. Investigators that way. Of course, sometimes we just get these golden people showing up on a door wanting to be baptized, but that didn't happen too often. like I said, the knocking on doors thing, we did have some success, but that's, you know, that's not the most productive way to do it. But, you know, but as far as the creative aspects, I mean, I don't know that I was ultra creative, but I did have a companion that joined like a local basketball league.
Yeah.
He was playing on this team and he got to know a family on the team and they ended up joining the church. And it's pretty funny when they were investigating, you know, they got to be good friends with this elder and the other church came and knocking at the door and the guy opened the door and says, you know, basically, I can't really say, but basically something, you don't play hoops, and he shut the door because
you are not worthy. If you cannot, you don't pass play hoops with me, pebble.
So get out of here. And it was kind of funny, but they ended up joining the church and
wow.
But, yeah, so
that's like exactly that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There are other ways to do it other than just walking down a street or standing on a corner, but
yeah,
of course, you know, got to work within the mission rules.
Yeah. My mission had, we used Facebook and people within my mission found people through Facebook. And then also, I mean, like for me, the door to door idea, or more like the ringing of doorbells on apartment buildings, was very last resort for my mission. So we tried to like do anything before that. But I had a companion that was an artist. And so she would like do art. She even set up a couple of art like shows within Germany that were like Christian art shows. And then people would come. And, yeah. And I had another companion who was a singer, and she actually made a music video on the mission that was posted on YouTube and like did really well. So some people in my mission like were able to use their talents in really cool ways.
I love that.
Yeah. Okay. So kind of along the lines of I'm talking about Facebook, what did you have in terms of area books, phones, like your technology? What did that look like?
Your resources?
Yeah. Let's start with the technology.
We had paper and pencils.
Number two pencils, yes.
Yeah, I mean, instead of any kind of Google Maps or anything, we had a paper map. We get into the area and there's the area book, which is a three-ring binder or just a file full of 3x5 cards with all the, you know, current people that the missionaries had been working with. It might have like a word list in it, but then you'd have like a map of your area. And you just work with that. I mean, you know, there's no, hey, how do we get to this house? You know, you just have to ride your bike around and find your way around. But it was kind of funny. There was, you know, you get some previous elders or missionaries that would write notes on some of these members' contact information. And some of them are pretty funny.
Oh.
Something, one was something about a green bug coming out of their head. I don't know. It was
weird. Ew.
We're like, what does this guy do?
Anyway, that have to do with it?
Maybe it would help you find the person.
So if you were waiting for a call from like someone that you were teaching or a member, you would have to be at home to receive that call?
Yeah, we had a home landline. Yeah, that was our only way to call anybody, and we had to be at home. So if we were out and about, you know, we're cut off. And
yeah,
sometimes it didn't work for our good. I mean, sometimes we would be late for an appointment and there's no way to let them know, hey, we're tied up, you know, and you have to work with that. And sometimes it wasn't a good outcome, but you know, it's like, sorry.
You know. Yeah. What else can you do? And what did you have, Brett?
Actually, it was quite different. Our pieces of paper were 8x11 instead of 3x5s. But aside from that, it was identical. And the addresses were on there, but we didn't have the Google Maps. So if you didn't know the streets, you're like, where is like 1703 Eileen Villa?
Honestly, I think this is kind of crazy that this difference here is still kind of the same. Whereas for me, like a few years after Brett, I had a tablet, which had an online area book. We had not so long into my mission, we all got area smartphones. And then the missionaries started coming in with their own smartphones. And so within a companionship, you have two smartphones and a tablet, and you were able to WhatsApp your people. And like, we never missed a call. We never missed a text. And we always knew where to get places and what time we'd arrive. And that seems like the way that everyone is probably now.
Oh, right? My bad. We did have like an OG Nokia cell phone. Oh. That's the bridge from Darren to you. Right. The Nokia cell phone is like the connector.
Yeah, true. That's crazy. Is there anyone that just recently returned that is more similar to Brett? Or do we all kind of...
Is like everywhere using tablets?
Yeah, is it all smartphones or tablets? No, I wonder.
No, our youngers. My youngest just had their own cell phone. They didn't have tablets.
Yeah, yeah. The people coming in at the end of my mission only had... They came in with
I bet smartphones. You everyone in the States has smartphones.
Yeah,
probably
for sure.
Most European countries.
Yeah.
I don't know. Be interested about like Africa and South America and the islands.
My Isabel had a cell phone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she didn't have it very long afterwards.
She's in Africa. Yeah. That's true. That's cool. Okay.
That was a good one. That was fire.
Now maybe let's talk about our relationships within people in our mission. So like our relationship with our mission president and the mission president's wife. You had two. I had two.
One.
He had one. And I want my dad to talk a little about this first, just because his is maybe more unique, I think. So go ahead. What was your relationship with your mission president?
My mission president was Herschel Pedersen. He, very tall. He's like 6'9". He played basketball.
That's
at BYU.
Coming from someone who's 6'4".
Yeah, I'm 6'4".
That's huge.
And you know, he's a big sports guy, but he's also a huge missionary. He served in Denmark. Back in the old days when they would take a ship out to their mission and take 3 months to
That's
get
cool.
there, you know, and you never know when your son's getting home, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow.
Anyway, he served when he was 56 and he had 9 kids. As he would say, all of them were boys except for the last 8. But, he had, they're all great kids. And his wife, Shirley, was awesome. She was like, you know, I'm sure like most mission presidents' wives were like the mother of the mission, very loving and always kind of keeping an eye out for all the missionaries and especially the sisters. But he was spiritually a giant. I mean, we would go to mission conferences and meetings and just be like, you know, because he just like quote scriptures left and right and tell stories that just blow you away. And you're just like, whoa. But he even after the missions, like so through the whole mission, he was very involved with the church mission program before his mission. He was called to serve on a church mission board, kind of like one of two or three other people, and kind of he's very involved with like how they created the mission rules as well, I think. But he was one that didn't love giving a lot of rules, you know, to missionaries. He felt like, you know, you need the basic rules to keep them safe, but he didn't like imposing rules upon missionaries that they're just going to feel guilty when they break, you know, try to make them not be disobedient as much as possible. But he also had a very big desire to make sure his missionaries served a mission. And so I don't know of anybody he sent home, unless that I know of. That was, if he sent them home, I don't know. I'm sure there were some, but they
wanted to keep people there.
He kept them there. He worked with them, and, you know, knowing that this experience was such a great experience, that's going to help them throughout their life. I mean, if you Google him, he's got lots of books and talk tapes out there. You can hear some of his personal stories. But anyway, after the mission, especially after Facebook kind of became a thing, you know, the mission Facebook page appears, and all of a sudden you're getting reconnected with all these missionaries that you didn't know for, you know, how long it was. But then we started having these mission conferences, and, you know, it was amazing how many of these elders that I hadn't served with forever would come to listen to him talk for an hour, you know, all over the country. And
yeah, I attended one of those. He does talk for an hour.
Yeah.
And like a whole hour. And all of his fellow mission companions and mission friends are all taking notes. They got like 6 pages of notes that they're taking. It was crazy, because I was like almost this age. Yeah. And you're like, you were still so close to him.
Yeah. And his wife, they were just, they'd always remember our names. And he passed away like 3 years ago. But it's still interesting now, even with like on Facebook, anybody that's part of that mission group, if ever they post something that is worthy of a like, you'll see my mission companions and other people on mission. A lot of the people that actually made those comments are coming. So it became a really close group, through him and through his leadership and just the love he had for the gospel and for missionary work and the ability he had to use the Spirit to guide him and all that he did. The man fasted probably once every other week.
Yeah.
In fact, cool. I think the general authorities told him, stop fasting. Because
he went to the temple every day, right?
Yeah, he would walk the temple every morning at the Timpanogos Temple. He was in the mission presidency for a while there. He'd go every morning, 5:30 session, and do the session. He'd walk there and back, and he served multiple missions after he served as our mission president. So, yeah. So spiritual, I feel very blessed to have had him as my mission president. So,
yeah.
I know. I didn't know before serving a mission that people like really look up to their mission president and their mission president's wife. Like, it's probably not universal, but they're usually very spiritual people and like serve as great mentors for you going forward in your life. And they are a huge blessing to have. That's a really cool story you shared.
One fun thing in terms of relationships with people is that Brett married someone from his mission, and my sister did as well. But my sister didn't know him before, and I don't think you were like in a district, right, with Caitlin? But
yeah,
didn't like
dating was only a P-day later thing with her. Specifically relegated to Monday. No, that was a joke. We had the same district, the same zones. We had a lot of the same areas. So we weren't in the same places a lot of times at the same time, but we ended up knowing so many of the same people, which is way cool. Because you can be in the same mission as someone, and if you're in all different areas, I mean, you know missionaries, but we knew all the same members, and that was way fun to talk about when we both came home.
Yeah. I think even, you know, obviously, Brent and Caitlin weren't dating on their missions, but I do think that a lot of people find their people on their missions, even though it's like we're not like encouraging that, but also it happens and it's cool. So whatever.
Yeah, because you have such a unique shared experience.
Yeah.
That when you get back and you're going on awkward first dates, it's pretty refreshing to go on a date with someone who has shared like the last year or two of your life in a way.
Yeah.
It makes it way easier.
And you can speak a second language together.
There's some synergy there, definitely.
It's cool. Okay.
Not the motivation, but it is a great
potential
secondary effect of the mission.
I think they even almost not, I wouldn't say they encourage it any as much as they don't discourage that result.
The post mission,
definitely neutral at least.
Yeah. The post mission like get togethers, like they're gonna be like, hey, This elder was cool. You know him.
I think the locals in New Zealand didn't like their missionaries so much because they'd come back and steal all the good-looking women.
That can be the beginning clip of this video. The intro clip.
And they were like, I did not do that.
Do you have anything that you want to mention about your relationships with your companions or maybe even like people that you helped get baptized or baptize?
One thing that's like neither of those, But that, to start off with, on a tangent,
good prompt,
is I loved going into different members' homes and just feeling the spirit there and seeing how they lived the gospel. We grow up in a family and our families live the gospel a certain way, and that's great. It was fun to see other people, how they exercised their faith, and I just loved meeting members and like feeling built up by their spiritual examples. Those are some of my favorite memories from the mission, are just members that we got to know, and like it's a huge blessing to see their faith and their discipleship.
I do think that it's also probably, or at least it should be, a universal experience for all missionaries, that one thing that you come back with is this incredible love that you have for the people that you served. And I mean, I definitely experienced that, but like almost in a way that you probably never had before, right? Like this, like love for the people that you didn't even know you could have, and you do. So that's really special.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous of some of the, you know, the communication opportunities that people have nowadays, right? Because I was on a mission, you left an area, and that all those people you got to know and love, you kind of just moved on, and
that was it, probably.
And you know, I always wonder. I just think, you know, how is so and so doing? I wonder how they're doing. And but nowadays, you know, you're on Facebook. Hey, they're doing this, and
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, definitely, there's you get to really love these people, and you know, and of course, when you're going to different countries, you get to love the cultures that they live in, you know, and kind of start to understand them more as a people and from where they are in. But yeah, in the experiences you have, and I mean, just one short story. I was in a member's home family. We had dinner there, and I'm sitting there, and this kind of a story of how much I think, you know, our Heavenly Father loves us and looks out for His missionaries. Because we're sitting there, and I see sitting on one of the counters this thing cut out of wood. It was CDM, and had like a mountain scene painted on it, and that stood for Colorado Denver Mission, and I'm from Denver. And so, oh wow, so he served in Denver. So I looked at it, and my mom painted these things for a guy that lives in our stake. And I look at him like, my mom painted this. So I'm sitting there in New Zealand in a home, you know, somebody I just barely knew, and got to see some artwork that she had painted for this elder, you know, years before, and get that little connection with him. And that's but really it was cool. It was pretty cool. But it was interesting. I could tell it was hers. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's my mom's painting.
I was sensing that story coming up, and I was hoping that you were going to tell it. That's cool.
They also protect you with bananas, but I won't get into that one.
Why not?
You want me to tell that story?
Yes.
Like a protection totem.
This is the coolest story that I've heard from his mission. Right. I'm sure there's, well, okay, coolest.
Pressure's on, Sabrina.
Coolest in a certain way, coolest. You know?
So yeah, me and my companion, we're both pretty good sized guys. I'm 6'4", he was 6'3", we're pretty good sized guys. We're serving in a part of New Zealand called Otara, which is a little bit rougher, and it was late. We're at a member's home, leaving dinner, and it was winter time, so we had trench coats. This is what we wore. So we're leaving the house, and as we're leaving, the member gives us each a banana as we leave the house. And so, okay, thanks. You know, this never happened before. Put the bananas in our trench coats and started walking back home to our flat. So we're about halfway home, and two drunk guys are in the street. They see us, and they start going, hallelujah. And they, you know, so they're coming over to us. We go, oh, great, you know, what are they going to do? And they go, oh, praise the Lord, you know, and then it's like, what do you guys got in them trench coats, guns? It's like, well, we got bananas. I pulled out a banana. The guy goes, the guy pulled a gun on me. I was cracking up, and it just diffused whatever was going to happen. And we just took our bananas and went home. But yeah, I was like, thanks for giving me a banana to help.
Okay, well, there are still tons of things on this list. And then there's a lot of things that I didn't even get on this list. And so if you're interested in like hearing about other people's missions, whether it's generational or locational. It's locational a word?
Geographical.
Yeah. Whether it's generational or geographical, let us know, and we can totally do another one and have like other people on here, different people with different perspectives. And also, please comment yours. What any of these topics or anything else that you wish that you could hear, I would love to read it, because everyone's missions are so unique, and I think that they're really fascinating. So thank you for joining us, and read your Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Every day.
See ya.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening.
Be sure to check us out on YouTube.
And you can message us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. Bye.